Early.
Go for it, man.
Oh, we're live? Hey, the most radical thing you do with your life isn't parachuting, bull running in Pamplona, or cliff diving. It's loving yourself contagiously and spreading more love, joy, gratitude, and kindness out into the world and helping others do the same. What a great quote from our guest today, Robert Radnati. Stay tuned as we dive into what it takes to love and live contagiously. Raw, uncut, and unapologetic. Welcome to Men Talking Mindfulness. Hey, welcome back to the show. John and I are here once again, and we appreciate all of you who are listening to this episode. And hey, why don't you take a moment right now and help us grow the show by sending a text message right now with this link to three people who can become a little bit better by listening to this conversation and listening to Men Talking Mindfulness. So, what does it mean to love contagiously? Why is loving ourselves so difficult? Why is loving ourselves even important, or is it important? It might sound a little woo-woo to some of you. And if I want to love myself, what are the common obstacles to living and loving in this way? Well, this is why we invited self-evolution strategist and multi-million dollar business advisor Robin Radnati to the show to teach us about loving contagiously and clear up all these questions. So again, thanks everyone for being here. And if you want to plug a little bit deeper into Men Talking Mindfulness and understand and get in our email list and see the retreat that we have coming up in Colorado Springs in May 16th to the 19th, you can text us at text MTM to 33777, or you can just head to mentalkingmindfulness.com. Use the text to 33777 and just text MTM to that number. Hello, John. Hello, Robert. Great to have you guys here today. I'm excited for this conversation, and thanks again
for
being
here. Hello, brother, and hello, Robert. And Robert, if you've never heard our show or watched our show before, we always like to lead it off with a one-breath grounding practice. Mm-hmm. And it is as much for our audience as it is for us, it is as much for us as it is for our audience or for our community, rather. So we're going to jump right into that one-breath practice, and then we'll get into the meat and potatoes of the show with some questions for you. So let's go ahead and sit comfortably, and if that means closing your eyes, then I invite you to do so. Otherwise, just soften your gaze and just bring your attention to your breath for one complete round. An inhalation. A hold at the top and an exhalation. And on that breath, go ahead and shake out. Maybe wiggle your fingers, your toes, move your head around, and blink your eyes open if they were closed. And let's get into the questions with Robert. Robert, again, welcome to the show. Happy to have you here with us.
I'm honored to be here and excited about whatever questions you're going to throw at me.
Well, we'll standard questions, you know, just to set the foundation, but then we'll try to throw some zingers at you too.
Okay.
Yeah,
bring it on.
Go ahead, Will.
No, so hey, thank you again, Robert. And why don't you just give us a little, you know, brief background about, you know, who you are and why you're doing this work with Loving Contagiously.
All right. Well, I'm on my third or fourth career right now. So I started out as a chemical engineer. I worked for Exxon for 25 years. And then I quit to become the head track and field and cross country coach at Pepperdine University.
Oh, nice. I saw that. Yeah, that's awesome.
Wow. My dad freaked out. My parents came over from Hungary during the revolution in 56. And, you know, they came here for a better life for myself and my sister. And he's happy that I was an engineer. And all of a sudden I quit to become a track coach. And I think they paid me $3,000 a year to start out with. But that was my passion. And, you know, I always been a big passion guy. That's what I wanted to do. It was my dream job. Unfortunately, it was minimally funded, no scholarships, and I wanted to win a national championship. And it never happened, but there was a reason, like everything in life. One of the things that I did there, though, because I wanted to get better, I was recruiting mostly JV kind of kids, or I just couldn't recruit. And so I decided to go to hypnotherapy school. And there's a place here in California that's the only accredited hypnotherapy school in the world. It's not like a weekend or a week or something like that, like a lot of people do. It was 18 months, and wow. It was intense. But I know 50 different modalities for hypnosis. And so I was going to hypnotize my athletes to run faster. I thought, this is it. And I remember the first time we had a meetup in San Luis Obispo, and six kids were brave enough to let me hypnotize them. And the next day, all of them set huge personal records. I go, this is it.
Wow.
And then the next Monday, my athletic director calls me in, and I thought, he's finally going to say something nice. And he wasn't the most supportive guy in the world. And he goes, hey, I heard what you did Friday night. I go, yeah, it was so cool. And then the next day, these kids ran great. He goes, looks at me, he goes, you know you can't do that. And I said, what? He said, yeah. We're a Christian university and you are playing God.
Oh, wow.
And I go, oh, geez, I forgot all about that. I thought I was really doing good here. But anyway, I eventually left that because of the athletic director. Didn't want to work for him any longer. And I started working for Tony Robbins and Joe Dispenza and doing hypnotherapy. And now just kind of helping people out in the world. So that's sort of, you know, that's sort of my journey and of three different careers and just having a blast.
Love it. Love it. Yeah. And then, so this third career, I mean, working for Tony Robbins and Joe Dispenza doesn't just happen from being a track and cross country coach. And first of all, I ran track and cross country in high school. And then I was enlisted in the Navy for a year before going to college and tried to run in college, and it's a totally different ball game in college. But I still have a deep love for my coach from high school. I still, mm-hmm. He's like a love-hate relationship. I loved him for who he was. I hated him for what he put us through, but I loved him for what he helped us to attain. But coming back, you know, how did you make that jump from being that cross country coach to working for Joe Dispenza and Tony Robbins? I mean, they're big names. It's not just, you don't just make that jump.
Well, you know, it started actually way back early on in my Exxon career. So Exxon actually has a lot of personal development for their employees. And I went through a program called Investment in Excellence, and it was just life-changing. That was kind of my first exposure, direct exposure to personal development. And I got into it. It was an affirmation process. It was a guy named Lou Tice who worked with the Seattle Seahawks when they won the Super Bowl, actually. So it's kind of cool. And from there, I became a facilitator of that. Then Stephen Covey came in, became a facilitator of that. And everything that kind of comes in, I become the facilitator because I want to learn it better. And then when I went to Pepperdine, actually, my wife at the time's cousin, he was a 22-year-old platinum partner with Tony Robbins, and he invited me to go to a Tony Robbins event called Date with Destiny. And the only thing I knew about Tony Robbins was he was the guy in the movie Shallow Hal that had hypnotized Jack Black to see the soul of women. I didn't know he was anything. But it was between cross country and track seasons, and I needed a break. So I said, sure, I'll go to this thing. And I went to Florida with him. I didn't know who Tony Robbins really was because he was a platinum partner. We sat kind of in the sixth row in the front. I'm just sitting there waiting for this thing to start. And all of a sudden, the music comes on and this power comes on. This guy next to me, he was an Indian fellow from England. He jumps out of his seat and he's going wild. And at that time, I was one of the biggest introverts I'd ever met. I'm no longer that. And I just like hunkered down, go, how am I going to get out of this place? But by the afternoon, I was one of those guys. And I had so much fun. Literally my whole life, I've been in charge of people having fun. This was the first place I've ever gone where I had fun. Wow. And I remember Tony saying something a couple of things that struck me, one of which was that many of you are here kind of by yourself, or you don't know very many people, or you're in a group without anyone. So why don't you take on a different persona and just try it on. And I said, I thought about this introversion versus this guy next to me. And I said, you know, I'm going to just try it on to see how it feels because I don't know how it feels. And it just kept building to the point where at the end of the event, and it was actually in the that was my first event. And it's the movie that he filmed, I'm Not Your Guru, on Netflix. In fact, I'm in the movie 3 times. And it was just so powerful. I signed up a coach at the end of that. And I heard him say that high performance people have coaches. And I literally did not know that. The way I was raised, if you ask for help from someone, anyone, that was a sign of weakness.
Right.
I literally didn't know that. And so it was just, okay, I'm signing up for this because I want to be a high performance person. I already am a high performance person. I want to be even a higher performance person. And I got so fortunate because the coach they picked for me, because of my, I was coaching at that time in athletics, they gave me his top athlete coach. So while Tony works with like Serena Williams and Andrew Agassi and a lot of sports people, you know, he works with them once, twice, 3 times a year. You know, he charges like $1 million per session. Well, he has this other guy, Chad Cooper, work with them year round. And so he, at one time, I think he told me he was working with like half the Major League Baseball players. And somehow wow. I got into that group and he was brilliant and really kind of accelerated me on the path. And then it wasn't too much longer where I joined the Platinum Partners, got to meet all those kind of people. You know, they talk about that you become the average of the 5 people you surround yourself with. So I wanted to surround myself with those kinds of people. And then I go, well, I'm always a leader no matter what I do. I just kind of gravitate their ass. So I got them leadership program and they became a senior leader and blah, 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 blah. And kind of the same thing happened with Joe Dispenza. It just nice. Happened during COVID because Tony stopped doing live events. And I really like live events, but Joe didn't really stop. So I started going to Joe Dispenza events. He has this company called NeuroChange Solutions that takes some of his learnings, teachings into the corporate setting. To where I came from. So I applied for that, got into that, and now I'm teaching that. Although I don't really do the corporate thing, Joe gave us approval to do what he calls open training. So what I've done is I've become the destination NeuroChange Solutions guy. And cool. So I create events around the world, just wherever I want to go to. And then I invite my friends to come with me and I teach this program. It's based on his book, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. We call it Change Your Mind, Create New Results. And so tomorrow I'm leaving for Vietnam, taking a group there because it was my mom's favorite place. So I'm going to Vietnam. And then in June, I rented a yacht and in Croatia, and I'll take 36 people on a yacht, and it's kind of cruise. We're going to cruise up to Venice, and I'll teach in the morning after breakfast before lunch, and then we land at the next place, destination. We get out, go have amazing things, and they've turned out to be just incredible experiences. I've done Greece and Turkey and Croatia once before there, nice. And I did Thailand last year, so that's kind of become my thing is awesome. Creating experiences and then teaching the programs that I've got.
Well, we'll definitely share. We have the notes, and I know there's a discount code for our audience, for our community as well. And we'll share that in the notes later. But I want to talk. You know,
let me just say one thing, John. I just want to remind. Robert said something. I'm sorry, cutting all you off. Robert said something very, very key for our men. And maybe you just kind of went one ear and out the other. That it's okay to ask for help, and that high performers need help to become high performers.
That's right. Yeah.
So
I did not know that.
I know, right? And a lot of men are be like, I don't need any fucking help. But I bet you do. I bet you can use some. So anyway, Robert should help too. So John, back to you.
Yeah, so yeah, I want to jump into, you know, the loving contagiously. You know, where did that come from? And why are you doing that work? And really, what does it mean?
Yeah. Okay, that's a really cool story because it came downloaded. So in that event, that Tony Robbins event, Date with Destiny, you develop your purpose or mission in life. And I went 8 years in a row. And the first 4 years, my mission was really corporate-y because I actually taught this at Exxon. So Exxon's mission was something like, you know, to be America's foremost energy producer so that we can safely invite environmentally, whatever. So my mission statement was like that. But in the Tony Robbins world, you have to yell and scream it at your partner over and over again. That's his process to get it into your subconscious.
Wow.
I could not remember my mission ever because it was just too damn long. And so the trainers are going, you got to make it shorter. And then my fifth year, it just came to me. And I wasn't necessarily looking for it, but that my purpose is to love contagiously. And I didn't know what it meant at that time.
That's hilarious. Wait, you didn't know what it meant, but you knew you had to do it.
And I knew that I could yell it at my partner when we're doing that exercise. So I'm sitting there going, this is a win. But
this is definitely divine intervention. Sorry, yeah.
It sounded so cool. But here's what happened shortly after that. I was back home. And a group of us, platinum partners, got together and make some gift baskets for a battered women's shelter right before the holidays. But the lady that was hosting it had a bowl full of these buttons. I've got one right here. It's a love button. It's a magnetic button. It says just love on it. And so I grabbed a big handful because obviously loving contagiously meant I'm supposed to hand out love buttons, right? And so I put them on my cargo pants. And then over the holidays, I'm giving them out to waiters, waitresses, flight attendants. And everyone is lit up. And I go, okay, well, this must be what love contagiously means. I'm not supposed to pass out these buttons. But I'm running out because I only had a small pocket. So I looked at the little wrapper on it, and it said Love Button Global Movement. So I Googled it to find out what it was. After all, it could be like a Nazi organization.
Exactly.
I get on their website, and the banner picture is a football stadium from the Super Bowl a few years before when my Denver Broncos, hopefully yours too, John, won the Super Bowl, right? Yeah. And I go, okay, that's a sign. That's a good sign now. And you know Chris Martin from Coldplay?
Oh, yeah.
He was the halftime entertainer, and he bought 75,000 of them and gave one to everyone in the stadium. And so I go, that's pretty cool. I'm not super rich like him, but I decided to buy 1,000, and I'm going to give out about 3 a day. So that'll take a year. Put it on my Bake with Destiny board. That's going to be my loving contagiously thing. But I continued to read down, and the story of this organization was actually, it was founded by two doctors. They were husband and wife, and they had a cancer patient that had exhausted all their cancer treatments, and she's going to die. So they decided they were just going to pour love into her. And then the husband had this idea, this vision of this little logo. It has like a dove on it. And he drew it on a little piece of paper, and they cut it out in a circle and pinned it to his doctor's coat and then went about his hospital rounds. And pretty soon people started noticing it. So he started making some for other, doctors, nurses, staff, and things like that. And then lo and behold, the lady survived, and they felt like that was a sign, and they decided to create what they called the Love Button Global Movement, and they made these pins and sold them, and then they gave the money to loving organizations. So I'm going like, this is really cool. I don't know how this came. It's like divine intervention, but it came. And the story goes on. There's so many aspects of this, but I wanted to just share that I oftentimes, when I'm at a Joe Dispenza event, I man the NeuroChain Solutions booth. People come up and ask questions, and I usually give them a love button, and I tell them a little bit about the story. And usually people kind of light up again. But about a year ago in Nashville, I'm doing this, and the lady started tearing up. And I go, what's wrong? I mean, like, are you okay? And she goes, that was me.
Oh, I said, wow. What?
I said, what? She said, I was that lady.
Oh,
I mean,
my gosh.
I still get goosebumps when I think about it. And she said, do you know Dr. Da, 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 da? I don't remember. I don't know who the doctors are. She said, well, they're my best friends. They saved my life. So we took a little selfie. We sent it to them. And it was just another piece of the story that continues to become amazing. And now I've given out about 15,000 of my love buttons, and it just lights up people. And now I was at a Dispenza event last weekend and met someone, and they ordered 500 buttons to start doing that too.
Nice.
And I met someone last summer at an Abraham Hicks cruise, and she bought 300 for her son, who was a super introvert or worried about him in school because he didn't connect to anyone. And this, she sent me a note, such a beautiful note, saying, my son gave one to his teacher, and it was like the first time she'd ever seen him smile.
Oh.
And then when he came home from school, he asked if we could go to the mall, and he just started giving out randomly to people in the mall. And so, I mean, that's what loving contagiously is. And so when you ask me the question of what it is, I'm not sure, other than it's evolving, it's turning on people, it's going inside. I still don't know that I know what it is, other than I'm seeing the effects, and I know that it's right. become a very powerful thing in my life.
Mm.
Well, your experience with it, I mean, it's almost sounds, well, because love is our first nature, right? That's, you know, what I'm thinking that I understood, and I is the only power that we have when we're a small child is love. And it's like the one thing that keeps us alive is just like we're so our spirit is so pure. And we're brought into this world, and you know, everybody is like, I see a baby in the subway and I can be having a real shitty day, and I just light right up. I'm like, I wave to the kid, I'm like, hi, you know, I mean, and it, it's just, there's this kind of movement, I guess, and this this awareness of love when you kind of pass out these pins. Is this from your experience? Sounds like it just kind of, you know, wakes up the love that is just right underneath the surface, or maybe it's already there and just kind of heightens it a little bit. Is that kind of, you know, is that what's going on here with like this loving contagion?
I think that that's part of it, but I think it's, there's so much that I don't even see, because it just kind of keeps expanding. And now it's actually led me on a quest, because my son about a year ago asked me, he said, Dad, what is love?
Yeah.
And I go, uh-oh, this is a really hard question. He's at a critical point where I've got to come up with a good answer. And truthfully, I didn't have a very good answer. I said, you know, it's this feeling like you really like someone and blah, 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 blah. I don't know what I said, but it wasn't satisfying to him. And then I started actually doing some more research. And, you know, I just Googled, what is love? And I started asking people. And it's fascinating to, because I know that in the pre-show, you're going to ask me some questions about what is self, blah, 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 blah. And I'm sitting there going, uh-oh, this is going to be a really hard question, because I still don't know the right answer. Because it's not handing out love buttons. It is bringing that energy first to yourself. You know, taking care of yourself, taking care of your body, taking care of your mind, taking care of your soul, taking care of your spirit. And it's got to be all of that to be right. really loving to yourself. And when you're loving to yourself, then you just automatically are loving to the world.
Yeah. I'm actually doing a little search here on a new AI, that I've heard of called Perplexity. And I asked, like, biologically, what is love? And you know, it's saying it's a, you know, chemical substances are involved, the study of oxytocin and its role in producing human experiences linked to love, you know, evolutionary explanation, love may promote mutual parental support, you know, exclusive long-term relationships, and could be a signal of reproductive fitness, which I think is interesting. You know, love from a biological perspective is a complex interplay of psychological processes, neurochemical reactions, and evolutionary mechanisms designed to promote bonding, reproduction, and the survival of the species. It's not merely an emotion, but a multifaceted biological process that influences humans' behavior, mental state, and physical well-being. The concept of love encompasses various components, including lust, attraction, and attachment, each mediated by distinct pathways. So that's just the biological function of love. I thought I'd just throw that out there.
I'm glad Robert didn't tell his son that.
What was so surprising is that was going to be my answer if you asked.
Robert feeds the AI machine. That's good. So you talked about, you know, that self love and loving ourselves, taking care of our souls, our spirits, our health, our wellness. You know, Why is that so important for ourselves? And then what does that do for the people and those that we love around us?
Yeah. Okay. So you guys have probably, a lot of people have heard of Celestine Prophecy or read it or the movie or whatever, that, you know, essentially what it is, for people that don't know, that as you're going through life, there are signs along the way that we mostly miss until we start kind of paying attention. But one of the things that I think, to answer your question, I think if you want to live a full life, if you want to be alive, if you want to just fully love, that you've got to take care of yourself first. And there's a pretty famous poem that I just recently came across by, was it Kabrim Grabal? I don't know how to say his name, but, you know, he wrote the Prophet. And the poet, or the poem, is called Khalil Gibran. Lover. Mm-hmm. Yes. Sorry, yes. The poem is called Don't Love a Half Lover. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful poem, but it talks about, don't live half a life. Don't dream half a dream. Don't do half a podcast. Don't do anything half. And kind of the conclusion is, do everything fully, 100%. And, you know, for me, I do a lot of plays on my name. My last name's Radnoti, so everything is Rad. The coach at kids call me Coach Rad. I have Ratitude. I'm Radtastic Life. Well, in this particular case, I say live in Rad, or live Rad. And that's that sort of outwardly and inwardly, but mostly kind of outwardly, go live a full life. So all the things that you want to do, whatever's on your bucket list, go just do them. And there are incredible life strategists like a Tony Robbins or Brenda Bouchard or Mel Robbins, or, you know, a whole host of people. And then a lot of coaches that can help you do that. And so go do that. But that's one of my four quadrants. I don't think that that's the only thing. Unfortunately, a lot of people just go do that, and then they have some successes or not. And then they go, well, what else? And but I think that you just got to start, and then the doors or the experiences, the opportunities are going to show up, and just pay attention. When you're living life fully, you'll start paying attention and go, oh, look at that. I need to go that direction or that direction. Whether it's, you know, depending on people's beliefs, their faith beliefs, you can believe that that's God directing you, or source directing you, or universe, or your inner being, or whatever. It kind of doesn't really matter. Usually someone has some kind of belief, and then just go with that and become more and more awake and alive, and, you know, become mindful, really.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, some of the other ways to, you know, I did a year at Stanford University studying self-compassion, and you know, love can be a very broad subject for people, you know, and it's just like, you know, falling in love, you know, loving other people, loving the planet, loving yourself. And, but there are like other ways of expressing love, which I think are really important. And to come back to what you said about, you know, loving yourself first, and ways to do that are, and with other people as well, because if you can to experience love in these ways, such as like being patient, being kind, being compassionate, being empathetic, you know, to yourself, like you're going to have a greater opportunity of expressing that, those forms of love to other people. And that also becomes more of how you kind of show up as a human being, and a part of those pins, like we're kind of reminded of that love that we have inside of us. And then to kind of show up in that way after you're being reminded, that's why we light up. That's why, you know, I love the visual that you gave of like people just like your son, like lighting right up when, you know, when they realize that like love is there, love is right there at the surface. We just need to kind of, you know, let go of ourselves, get out of our own way. That's a big part of it. And realize that, you know, love is just is part of the human experience. And the more we access that love, which you're continually talking about, like the more life just like we really begin to connect with that divine. We really begin to connect with the planet in the way that it's designed, is through, you know, all those aspects of love. Because without that, like, I mean, it's just, it's pure chaos.
I think what happens is that, you know, we get to a point, I think most people get to a point where something happens, or maybe they just think about it, but that they turn inward. And I think that inward turning is a really critical portion of love. And there's two directions I think you need to turn. And this just came to me like in the last week or so, because a lot of people turn inwardly kind of spiritually, whether that's religion or Buddhism as a philosophy or meditation or gene keys. I'm kind of into that right now. You do that. But one of my observations, because I'm really, especially when I go to the Dispenza world, there are all these spiritual people. They're amazing spiritual people, and yet their lives aren't necessarily great. And one of the things I discovered, and this was really hard to do, is that there's another aspect of turning inwardly that particularly men don't want to do, and that's psychology. You know, the inner child work, the shadow work, the grieving work. And, you know, truthfully, in order to do that well, you need to go to a therapist. Ooh, I can't even say that word barely, right? Because there's such a stigma against that. We don't want to go to a therapist to have this kind. So I read books and, you know, had a workbook. And it wasn't until I worked with a spiritual guide who's really a therapist where I started doing this inner child work that would just blew me away. And it helped me move from really reacting as a defensive child after I'm wounded, you know, triggered. This comes up in intimate relationships, right? And to figuring out how to be an adult. And until you've gone through that, healing that child, which is a very loving thing to do, it might be the most loving thing I've done. I don't think you get there, but most men, including me, just would never, ever want to go there because of the stigma of it. Right. And you know, that's my message here. You know, bringing back to what Will said is asking for help. We don't even know who to ask. And some of the help we don't want to do because what would someone think if we did that?
Yeah.
If we had a coach or we had a spiritual guide or we had a guru or we had a therapist. And I guess I've gotten to the point in my life now where I think that is so important if you want to accelerate your life to live in rad in love and contagious or whatever your words are. Because I suggest to people, you come up with your own phrase for yourself. It could be live in John, live in Will, and loving
without fear.
Yeah, whatever it is.
Yeah, well, but,
but it's just so important that people get on this path. And, Will, you were at Stanford, and I can't remember the professor's name up there, but she wrote a book comparing fixed mindset versus growth mindset.
Right.
And, you know, many people have fixed mindsets. They're not going to go do this. But growth mindset people, they can grow, and they will grow. It just depends on their pace. And if they ask for help, they're going to go a lot faster.
Right. Yeah. And I think you're reading our notes a little bit because our next question was about men and the obstacles that we face with getting to this loving contagiously or again, whatever we want to call it. And I think one of them is turning inwardly through that therapist, through the shadow worker, whoever. And, you know, I go to therapy regularly and within the SEAL teams, there was a time when I was like, oh, those go into therapy are weak minded. Yeah. And then I started to see it from a different angle. And rather than seeing it as therapy, I started to see it as mental fitness. And once I just changed that term, I was like, oh, it's mental fitness. I'm working out my brain, essentially working out my soul, working out my spirit. That helped a lot. And, you know, one of our friends, Lauren Thru, she's a big time shadow worker and I've been doing shadow work with her. You know, when I heard shadow work, I was like, what is that? And, you know, then I was like, you know what? She's a friend. I'm going to find out what this is all about. And man, just a few sessions with her and doing that kind of work to find out the inner child and, you know, what I judge in other people, but also what I'm judging in myself through that work. Mm-hmm. It was incredibly powerful. So little plug for our friend, Lauren Thu, T-H-E-W, check her out. And if you can't check her out, check out the shadow work as a whole. But yes, definitely men, I think we get into that fixed mindset. I think growing is something that men are starting to do, tapping into the growth mindset, which is fantastic, which is one of the reasons we have this show. And one of the reasons we have guests on like yourself is to help men grow. But how does loving contagiously change us for the better?
Well, as you were talking, one of the things that popped into my head was the drama triangle. Are you familiar with the drama triangle?
Yeah, sure am.
Okay, oh, so please tell me. I don't know what the drama triangle is.
Okay, so visualize a triangle, and the tip of it is the hero or rescuer, which is most of us men, right?
Yes. We want to fix this.
At one of the base points is the victim. And the other one is a perpetrator. And we get into this drama triangle often because we have a vision. I certainly did until maybe a week or two ago that I want to be the hero. I want to be the rescuer. I want to be the knight in shining armor. Hollywood story, that's how I want my life to be.
Right.
I keep getting into these relationships where I become that. I'm awesome at it. But when you go there, your partner becomes the victim.
Right.
And they go further into becoming a victim. And then eventually the hero rescuer gets exhausted or resentful because, oh, man, this person is taking so much advantage of me. I'm spending all this money, this time, blah, 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 blah. I'm a pleaser. I'm doing all that stuff. I got to escape and go away. And it's not their fault. It's because we came into it as wanting to be that victim or that hero and rescuer. Right. And we created this thing. Right. And so the learning for me, and I guess coming back as an example of loving contagiously for me was giving up the need to be the hero rescuer and have that story. And instead of the drama triangle, I want a circle. I want a circle where I am, I don't know what the right word is yet, but equal or have a fair partnership where we're both contributing and we're not going to needing to save the other person because it's not our job. Right. Our job is to love contagiously on ourselves, to heal ourselves, to save ourselves. And then we can show up in the world and live fully and inspire other people, but not save other people. And I'm just guilty of that. I think a lot of men are guilty of that.
Definitely.
And then we build resentment and
we become the perpetrator.
We become the perpetrator. Exactly. That's what happens. We break up. We become the perpetrator. And then we switch roles and they become a scorned woman. Then I become the victim. Oh, poor me. She's yelling at me, screaming at me. She won't talk to me. She ghosts me. And then it's over with. And then you go on to the next one. You do it over and over again until you break the cycle.
Right.
When you actually love contagiously on yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of relationships with men, and what you bring up there is really important. Men typically, and a lot of the men you're probably listening out there, maybe if you listen to a show for a while, maybe you're not this way as much anymore, but we're very solution oriented. And to be solution oriented, you know, we're very transactionally based. It's like, you know, you have a problem, I can fix that problem. And that just keeps us at this transactional level where a lot of men don't want to go in to the emotional realm. And in order to go to the emotional realm and just be with a person and not try to fix their problem requires patience, requires just the ability to listen and to hold space, to keep your mouth shut. And sometimes that, from my experience, and I've worked on this for a long time, and I've gotten much, much better at it, and I still have room to grow, is just listening, holding space. And that is like, you talk about a container of love. Just holding that space, letting people emote as much as they want, you know, brag, whatever they want to do or say when you are coming together as human beings and just listening to each other as human beings. There's so much love that comes without trying to get into that transactional place and kind of fix their problems. And it's uncomfortable sometimes. And it took me a long time, you know, to kind of stay grounded and stay listening and stay focused instead of being like, oh, well, I know what can fix your problem or I can help with that. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of, I don't know, a lot of relationships with men that I have. And that's definitely been me in the past.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, Yeah, me too. I'm a chemical engineer turned college track coach. We're used to solutions and telling people what to do.
Right,
and
right.
It's like a 180 to do what we're talking about, what you guys are talking about, what you guys are teaching. And right. It's important work.
And it comes into play, you know, in romantic relationships, definitely, but it can also come into play at work. It can come into play as a parent. You know, I find myself quite often trying to fix things for my kids, and quite often all they want to do is be heard, rather than me fixing things. But I know we're coming short on time with your schedule. I know you got a dance class that you're going to be heading to
shortly. Love it.
Argentine tango.
There we go. And that's bold of you to do too. My biggest fear is dancing. My absolute biggest fear is dancing.
Well, me too.
That's
I started
not true.
A year ago.
Oh, nice. Good for you. It's actually not true. I like dancing. I just don't like other people seeing me dancing. As we're coming up on the end, I know you've got some things that you want to share. You talked about the Vietnam trip. You talked about the Croatia cruise. And I know next year you've got a men's mentoring program kicking off. Where can people find out more about what it is that Robert Radnoti, I mispronounced it at the beginning. Again, I'm in the habit of mispronouncing people's last names. I've got to get better about that. But where can they find out about what it is you're doing and get in touch with you if they wanted to do that?
Well, that's the easiest place. Go to robertradnoti.com. Or you can just Google my name. Someone told me when I was coaching at Pepperdine even that there's like 18 pages of Google articles on me from my Exxon days and my Pepperdine days. So I'm actually really easy to find. And truthfully, on Facebook, I tell people where I am at every day of the year because I'm traveling all over the world.
Oh,
so
nice.
If anyone wants to know where I am, they just have to look on Facebook. And I'm the only Robert Radnoti in the world that's on Facebook or Instagram. So I'm easy to find.
There you go. Easy enough. Easy enough.
Thank you.
Well, you know, and one of the things that we should have asked you prior to this is we bookend the show with a practice. Like I started one off and then at the end we wrap it up with one. And quite often when our guest is a practitioner or a teacher, we ask them if they would like to lead the closing practice. Would you be up for that?
Oh, sure.
Just a few minutes, like if that.
Okay.
Wrap it up.
Yeah, well, I'll do a little quick group hypnosis. So if everyone can just close their eyes.
Shit.
Close your eyes. Okay,
ask us for our money.
No, not at all. I'm here to serve you. Just close your eyes and just take three deep breaths and just relax and just let all the pressures and stresses of your life just go. And just wherever you might feel stress in your body, just imagine a white beam of light coming up through the top of your head and flowing through your body. Flowing down your head to your neck, and at your neck it splits into three, and two of them go to your arms, and just relax your shoulders and your biceps, triceps, into your hands and out through your fingers and down through your neck, and swirls and twirls around all those beautiful vital organs within your body. And it continues down, and at the base of your spine it splits into two and goes down both your legs. Relaxing your legs, your thighs, and your hamstrings, and your calves and shins, and down to your feet and out through your toes. Now, I want you to imagine yourself at a beautiful beach, and you're on a platform, maybe 20 steps above the beach, and you're going to walk down there. It's a very safe platform, wooden platform. It's a beautiful day, nice and sunny, blue skies, blue water, could be deep waters or turquoise waters of the Caribbean, white sands, and you're going to walk down to the beach. And you're going to walk together. I'm going to count you down. So you're going to put your left hand on the left railing and put your left foot down to step number 19, and then your right one to 18, and then 17, 16, 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and deep sleep. And allow your mind to go to that special place in your subconscious where you're the most open to suggestions, because that's all hypnosis is putting yourself in a state open to suggestions to serve you, to benefit you, that come from you. And it's for the purposes of hypnosis only, and with your permission, that I'm going to make some suggestions in your subconscious, or rather, you're going to create an experience. Because now that you're down on the beach here, and you don't have shoes on, you've got barefoot, a person starts walking towards you. And it looks like there's someone that you're familiar with, but you're not sure. As they get closer and closer and they come right up to you, you realize that they look like you. And in fact, it is you, but your future self. And so you're looking at your future self. You're looking from your left eye to your future self's left eye, because your left eye connected to the left eye connects to the right side of the brain, which is your emotional side of the brain. And so you're just gazing into each other's left eyes. And then finally, your future self starts to speak and says to you, I've been waiting for this moment your whole life. And I've got a couple important messages for you to hear. Because I've been through all the highs and lows in your life and just been there with you. But I'm in your future, and I know that the future is going to be amazing for you. This next phase of your life is going to be great. But you're going to have to remember a few things in order to access that future life. And what you have to remember is that you are worthy. You are so worthy of this beautiful life that you're going to create. And that you are deserving. You deserve that. And that people have made mistakes. You've made mistakes because you're human. It doesn't matter. You're perfect just as you are. God or the universe or source or whatever you believe in created us to be human, and that we learn from mistakes. But you are deserving of this future life. You are more than enough. You are loving. You are lovable. And you are loved. And I just want you to take that in. You are deserving. You are more than enough. You are worthy. You are loving, lovable, and loved. And as you gaze into the eyes of your future self, you take that into your heart, and you want to just reach across and hug your future self. And you decide to go ahead and do that. And you hug yourself, your future self, and you pull them into you, but you pull them all the way into you because they're not real. And you pull it all the way into self. You pull your future self into you, being worthy, deserving, more than enough, knowing that you are loving, lovable, and loved. Because after all, your future self is you. This next phase of your life is exactly as you vibrate out into the world. So just vibrate high. And with that, we're going to bring you out of this short state of hypnosis by counting you out from 0 to 5. At 5, you'll come eyes wide open. For right now, is 0. Just feel and look at this beach scene that you've created with the blue skies and the ocean and the white sands. And just take it all in visually. If you can, smell all the smells there. Hear some sounds. Feel the sand on your feet and the warmth of the sun on your face. And just feel the feelings of loving yourself, of self-love, of loving contagiously, meaning you love yourself so much that it spreads out to others around you, to your community, to the world. And at 1, know that we made some suggestions into your subconscious to help you, to serve you, to benefit you, that really come from you on your quest to become a mindful man. And at 2, have faith in yourself, trust in yourself, believe in yourself. You got this. You've got this. We've just put some suggestions into your body, into your subconscious, that is now programmed into every cell within your body. And at 3, fill yourself up with excitement, anticipation for when you open your eyes and you go out and you just are alive, fully alive in this day, in this week, in this month, in this year. That it's going to be amazing as you step into your future self. And at 4, become aware that you're in your room, wherever you are listening to this podcast, and start to come back. And then at 5, eyes wide open. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, eyes wide open, and come back.
Awesome.
That's wonderful.
Yes, thank you, Robert. That was wonderful. I could definitely feel that beach, and I loved every minute of that. So thank you, and thank you for being with us today. I know you have to bounce and run to that dance lesson, and hopefully one day Will and I will join you on a cruise, and you can show us what you learned on that in those dance lessons. So, Will, I'll turn it over to you for any final words to wrap it up.
A big thank you, Robert, for joining us today and distributing some of your wisdom around loving contagiously and your experience with that. Love is available to all, everybody, all of you. It takes a little practice. We got to kind of get out of our own way in a lot of ways in order to, kind of get back to that first nature that we all are. And thank you for reminding us of that today, Robert, as well. That's all we got.
That's it.
Yeah, John?
Thank you, Robert. And thank you to our community for joining us. And until next time, take care.
Pleasure and honor being here.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope you walk away with some new tools and insights to guide you on your life journey. New episodes are being published every week, so please join us again for some meaningful discussion. For more information, please check out mentalkingmindfulness.com.